You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the oil report of the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Sunday, June 28th. Great compression expected to transform shale industry. The story was written by Mella McEwen. The coronavirus pandemic has roiled every industry around the globe, but combined with low oil and natural gas prices, will transform the U.S. shale industry, which has been centered in the Permian Basin for the last decade. Deloitte LLP calls the impact the Great Compression and called on energy companies to respond, recover, and thrive. In a report released last week, the company said operators should first respond through decapitalization and identifying cost-cutting opportunities to reduce their selling, general, and administrative spending. Recovery will entail a new engineering mindset, data analytics, and sustainability measures. Adopting digital innovations to completely transform operations may also be required. To thrive, operators should transform themselves from information technology-driven mindsets to an operationally integrated organization focused on the supply chain and alternative sources of energy, and commit to making energy transition a way of business, according to the report. Driving these changes are telecommuting or remote working becoming the norm, a new fuel order as natural gas prices provide an upside to that fuel, accelerating energy transition, and evolving trade and value chains. Quote, "The reverberations of the pandemic will extend beyond the U.S. shale industry. Although U.S. shales is less than 10% of global oil and gas production, it accounts for 40% of the global drilling activity and explains nearly 100% of the growth in U.S. midstream and export-oriented refining and petrochemical sectors over the past 10 years," the report reads. Continuing the quote, "Thus, any major developments in U.S. shales will likely have a domino effect on the global oil and gas industry," end quote. Dwayne Dixon, vice chairman and U.S. oil, gas, and chemicals leader at Deloitte, offered additional insight into the report's findings in an email interview with the Reporter-Telegram. Question, will this great compression significantly slow shale development and future supplies? Answer. COVID-19 has greatly affected the U.S. shale industry, with production and rig count down by over 10% and 60% respectively since March 2020. According to the EIA, tight oil production is expected to drop by 2 million barrels per day in 2020, marking the first annual decline since 2016. Typically, an oil price change impacts shale production with a lag of 3 to 6 months, but in the current environment, operators have responded immediately by shutting production. Such an extreme response highlights that this is not the same old cyclical downturn, but rather a period of great compression, with limited room for operators to maneuver in with oil below break-even prices, debt loads, reduced demand, and capital constraints. Although oil prices have fast recovered from the below zero levels to $40 a barrel, the recovery in shale development may not be that swift as many operators, and rightly so, would look for surety in oil price direction and prioritize financial discipline over growth. While this downturn won't mark the end of the shales, it certainly has put a headstone on the growth-at-any-cost model the industry had for many years. Question. with the Great Compression, are you expecting fewer companies doing more? Answer. Consolidation is a necessity for the long-term soundness of the U.S. shale industry. Although being adventurous in today's uncertain environment could be fatal for buyers, staying on the sidelines of this disruption may not be the best option either. The key question is what to buy and, more importantly, what not to buy. The pandemic has taught one big lesson to all of us: stay healthy, and that is applicable for the shale business too. Thus, any large acquisition or merger should be considered only if 1 + 1 is greater than 2 on both operational and financial fronts. The leaderboard of the industry is about to change, and ultimately fewer, stronger companies with next-generation digital and engineering capabilities will lead the future of shale. Question: what assistance do you recommend companies receive to respond and then recover and thrive? Answer: the uncertainty inherent in the post-COVID situation requires a 360-degree tactical and strategic refresh. Undoubtedly, the first imperative is to respond to the current market situation and safeguard the business by saving both capital and cost. Decapitalization should be the immediate priority for this business, followed by a rapid cost and value diagnostic approach across the operations. The new norm of telecommuting should be seen as an opportunity in crisis, as it has given a strong purpose of remote operations to digital transformation. Progressing from respond to recover and eventually thrive requires a new engineering mindset, increased reliance on data science, a renewed workforce, an integrated workplace, and long-term, a strong commitment to leadership on sustainability measures. Oil field service sector expected to get leaner, more efficient. The story was written by Mella McEwen. A very different-looking oil field service sector is expected to emerge from the aftermath of the COVID-19 pandemic and ultra-low commodity prices. Quote, "The impact is going to be dramatic," said James Wakeland, Managing Director, Stevens Incorporated, last week during a weekly webinar on issues impacting the oil industry. The webinars are presented by Grant Schwartzwelder, President and owner of OTA Compression LLC, OTA Environmental, and Kymark, along with the Permian Basin Petroleum Association. Quote, "We had the rig count drop by 700 rigs in the last 12 months, from 948 or so to 266. That has to be one of the fastest drops in history," Wicklund said. Continuing the quote, "That is the lowest in recorded history and the lowest since Abraham Lincoln was president," end quote. He predicted the rig count decline hasn't bottomed out quite yet, but is close. He expects some operators who had discontinued their drilling programs entirely to bring a few more rigs into service. The rig count, he said, should reach bottom in the next couple of weeks and then see an anemic recovery the rest of the year. Quote, "We're actually completing DUCs, drilled uncompleted wells now," he said. Continuing the quote, "We spent several years compiling a DUC inventory. People were wondering what it would take for that inventory to be worked down. Prices are low enough now, and the futures price strip as such, that drilling new wells is not a good idea, but completing wells for half the price is a good idea," end quote. Jim Whiteley, owner of Texas J&A Services, said his company has been challenged by the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic and downturn in the industry, just like other companies have. Quote, We're trying, and we've been working on projects, he said during an open house to show off some new products the company has developed. One is a new low-pressure flare that is 99.9% efficient. Also on display was a sand cat, which captures all the volatile organic compounds emitted during drill out. States like Colorado are already making their emissions regulations stricter, and Whiteley predicts Texas will follow suit in the next couple of years, quote, and we want to be ahead of the game, end quote. It and its sister company, Precision Service Equipment, manufacture pressure vessels, separators, treaters, and flares. During the downturn, he said the focus has been on keeping people at work. Quote, we don't want to lose anyone. We have some 20-year employees, end quote. So far, he said, he's avoided layoffs. Wicklund went on to express concern about the exploration and production industry, noting that a recent study from Deloitte finds the sector will see $300 billion of write-offs this year. Quote, that's greater than the value of ExxonMobil, he said. That's stunning in its magnitude, end quote. That will result in consolidation because of expected bankruptcies among the sector, and that will impact the service sector, he said. Wicklund said he expects that oil field activity will not return to the same level seen, say, 18 months ago, when the rig count was more than 1,000. That's due in part because the industry is capital intensive and is no longer able to access capital. Quote, over the last 10 years, to grow production as dramatically as we did, shale players still lost $2 billion. That tells me we can't continue that level of production or production growth. The people that were losing money during that period of time will lose access to capital, he said. As a result, he said the E&P sector will switch from equity-owned to creditor-owned and consolidate to fewer and larger companies. In the field, that means a service company providing pressure pumping services may not find it beneficial to own a lot of pressure pumping assets, or a compressor company a lot of compressors, he said. Consolidation in the E&P sector will be easier than in the service sector because many service companies have too much leverage, too much debt coming due too soon, or poor credit ratings. Quote, you don't have enough healthy people in the room to carry out a constructive marriage, he said. What he advises is two or three companies getting together. Quote, get Bob, Fred, and Johnny to put their three rental companies together, close two locations, and compete as best you can. This is what we see medium-sized companies that compete start to form. Not Halliburton, second-level companies. National Oil Well Varco was formed out of seven companies. It's more incumbent on those companies to do so, and easier. There's no board of directors or public shareholders to deal with, no debt because no one was willing to loan to you. Everyone has to swallow their ego. My company is worth more. So are Bob and Johnny's. Get rid of the ego. Mine is the better company. I have better people, better customers. None of that is any good. They'll stay small, lack scale, and they're going to lose, especially in the Permian Basin, with companies like Concho making acquisitions, Pioneer getting bigger. From Exxon and Chevron to the larger E&Ps and more, if you're not big enough to support them, meet your ESG and safety requirements, you won't work for those people, end quote. Whiteley agreed that consolidation is in the cards for the service sector, observing that there already have been a number of mergers. Quote, Everyone is working together to get through this, he said. While it's hard to know what the next 5 years will bring, Whiteley says he expects the industry to emerge leaner and more efficient. In the meantime, his company is taking advantage of the lull to develop new product lines. Quote, "We'll keep going," he said. "We're fortunate we're in a position that we don't need to join hands," end quote. Wicklund said he also sees bankruptcies weeding out the weaker players. Quote, "Over the last 3 or 4 years, bankruptcy changed from the past. When you went bankrupt, you closed everything down, sold your assets, the ideas that didn't work went away. In bankruptcy today, ownership change is the only difference. The people in the field, the senior management, the assets, nothing changed. You don't weed out the weak players, take out the strained assets. This time appears to be more of a chance for more of that," end quote. He said the industry is in survival mode and cutting costs and expenditures as much as possible. Quote, "I think 2021 will be better. I think oil prices will be higher," he said. "I still don't see oil getting to $50 or $60 or $70 anytime soon. It's good that demand has picked up. The worst of the COVID pandemic is behind us. No one is flying yet. Gasoline demand has bottomed out and going back up. The patient is not going to do any more. That was the fear for a few weeks. The patient isn't well yet, but there's a big sea change in attitude and sentiment," end quote. Rig count, just one piece of energy's economic picture. The story was written by Miller McEwen. For 80 years, the weekly rig count provided by the Baker Hughes Service Company has been used to gauge the financial health of the oil and gas industry. But today, that rig count may not be the most reliable barometer of the industry, according to a report just released by the data analytics company Enverus. The rig count once was the most tangible piece of data regarding oil field activity, according to Rob McBride, Senior Director of Strategy and Analytics at the Austin-based company. Quote, "But for how much the production there is or will be the future, it's not as reliable an indicator," he said in a phone interview. That's because of the advances in drilling technology that have improved both efficiency and productivity, McBride said. The May rig count fell 670 rigs, or 66% since March, implying a dramatic drop in output. But that statistic doesn't offer insight into which wells have been shut in and taken offline, drilled but not completed, or pipeline data, for example, needed for a more complete picture, McBride said. Having a more complete picture is impactful to anyone in the energy market, an oil and gas operator, an oil trader, or energy consumer, he said. Quote, "Whether it's for speculation or business planning, they need a view of the future a day from now, a week from now, 6 months from now, a year from now," McBride said. "They need to look at the entire forward curve to decide where and when they can make an economic rate of return," he said. "They need a sense of what supply will be in the future, where demand will be," end quote. Having a more complete picture may prompt a buyer to wait a bit and tell a producer if he will have a market for his oil and natural gas, McBride said. He offered as another example the fact that alongside the drop in oil output is the loss of associated gas, which he said will result in a change for natural gas prices to meet U.S. demand, especially in the winter when demand peaks. "The market is rapidly changing, as evidenced by events in March, April, and May," McBride said. Quote, What we know today will be different from what we knew yesterday, he said. The overriding influence on the market is the COVID-19 pandemic, he said. Quote, this event has no historical benchmark, McBride stated. We're trying our best to see when demand will return, but there is no benchmark. We've never seen this in our lifetime, if ever. I would call the market stable and hopeful, but I'm nervous about the data on the increasing case count in the pandemic. Right now, there's no instance of the government shutting down the economy again, but if that happens, the oil price gains are at risk, and the scenario of an extended recovery will be pushed backward. End quote. Should oil demand and prices recover enough to encourage some operators to bring production back online, he said other companies could follow suit and flood the market. Quote, the question is, how much do you want to start up, or do you wait and work through the inventory first? McBride asked. He predicted there will be a lot of volatility as each producer takes different action. Quote, there will be bursts of periods when supply is up and prices down, he said. From the smallest to the largest producer, each has a unique position, and depending on their capital, they're in a position where they can wait or they can't, he said.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Sunday, June 28th, 2020. Important Test Ahead for Markets by Dennis Elam, Assistant Professor at Texas A&M San Antonio and a graduate of Andrews High School. The Fed sets caps on bank payouts amid $700 billion loss threat. Since the rebound high, June 8th, all the big stock market moves have been to the downside. Day downdrafts of 1,800 and 700 DJIA points have occurred. An island reversal surrounds the June 8th high. This means a gap occurred on either side of 4 days where no trading took place. The gap remains, another bearish indicator. The transports will turn its trend down on a weekly close under 8,700. The S&P Small Cap 600 is also weak, threatening to break its 50-day moving average at 782. The important test of the next couple of weeks will be the shelf of support for the Dow Jones Industrials at 23,000. If that holds, expect a nice rally back up. If not, we may be in for a much deeper correction, possibly to the March 23rd low of 18,000. My proxy stock to watch is Cullen Frost Bank. It is well managed and earning millions of dollars while paying a 3.5% dividend. But since the high on February 12th, CFR has fallen first 50%, then risen 70%, and now has fallen 16% just this month. This is in stark contrast to the long bull run-up to February 12th. This tells us the tenor of the market has totally changed. Such yo-yo behavior of a blue-chip stock is indicative of at least an uncertain, if not bear market. Financial stocks finally helped a 300-point rally Thursday, but again, the downtrend is once again in force. Such stair-stepping down is bear market behavior. Crude oil briefly vaulted over $40 and is flirting now at $38.72. The shares of energy and service companies are not faring nearly as well. Profits are slim to none at this price level of crude. XLE ETF is below both its 50 and 200-day moving averages, MA. ExxonMobil peaked at $55 and has already fallen to $44 this month. Valero managed to top its 200-day MA for, well, one day at $75. It has already sunk back to $57. Again, this kind of volatility is broadcasting uncertainty, if not an outright bearish posture. The news is turning negative, along with prevailing social mood. Now we learn that millions more had the virus than first thought. Lockdowns are renewed in Texas. Elsewhere, mayhem reigns with monuments toppled amid increases in violent crime in Democrat-controlled spots like Chicago, New York City, and Detroit. Bull markets do not begin in this fashion. At this point, Trump trails badly in the polls, running against himself rather than Biden. Trump certainly does not play well with others, cascading through a notable string of advisors, several of whom are already speaking out in negative fashion. No wonder Biden stays shut in his basement. The best strategy would be to put the convention to good use. Here, have Trump declare victory over the economy, the virus, and over regulation. He will retire to his golf clubs and let Mike Pence run alongside Tim Scott as VP. It would catch the Democrats flat-footed with no ready Trump target, which is about all they have to run on. But that would be the smart move. Republicans have been short in that department for some time.
Thank you for joining us for this week's readings of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American Sunday Business and Oil sections. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 86 and partly cloudy. Tonight, clear with a low in the upper 60s. Then, tomorrow, sunny with a high in the mid-90s. Tomorrow night, clear with a low in the low 70s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
Welcome to this week's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American Sunday Lifestyle sections, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Odessa American for Monday, June 22nd. Grover, a force to be reckoned with. Businesswoman leads drive to pass healthcare-related sales tax. The story was written by Bob Campbell. Rosalind Redford Grover went to college to become a teacher, and now, a successful businesswoman instead, she still sees herself as a teacher in her second big campaign to bolster Midland Memorial Hospital in the past 11 years. Grover's Say Yes to Healthcare Proposition A quarter-cent sales tax to compensate for lost supplemental Medicaid funding goes to the voters July 14th, with early voting starting June 29th. When she was young, there were only two good options for women who wanted a career, teaching and nursing. So she majored in secondary education and minored in library science at the University of Arizona in Tucson before taking a master's in European history there. Then, being told women couldn't teach history in Cerritos, California, she spent a year as a school librarian and returned to her hometown. Quote, I'm still teaching in a way, trying to help people understand the problem, said Grover, who is 78. Quote, the federal government will reduce Medicaid supplemental insurance here by $38 million over 4 years, starting October 1st. Medicaid is a state and federal partnership, and each state designs its own programs. Texas has the highest number of uninsured people and one of the lowest Medicaid payments in the country. The federal government is trying to push the cost of health care as far down the taxing food chain as it can get it, and we have to make up for that difference. End quote. The sales tax won't be used for indigent care, which is already covered by property taxes. Grover's father, John J. Redfern, Jr., bought Flag Oil of Delaware in 1961 and in 1969 formed Flag Redfern Oil, where she was board chairman in 1988 when the company was sold to the Kerr McGee Corporation. She is chief executive officer of Redfern and Grover Resources and a board member at Viper Energy Partners, where she is on the audit committee. She is chairman of the board of governors of the MMH Foundation. Her mother's name was Rosalind, and she had a brother and sister. Her first marriage ended in divorce, and she married oilman Arden Grover, who died in 2012. She has 4 children and 5 grandchildren. Grover first became aware of the difference in opportunities that boys and girls were given when I was 8 or 9, she said. Quote, my father started Little League here in the late 1940s, and the national head of Little League came to Midland to see him, she said. I loved baseball, but this man said, honey, wouldn't you rather be at home playing with your dolls? I had dolls and liked